Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the Practical Evidence Podcast. Today, I'm not going to discuss a clinical guideline, because part of the benefits of having a show on practical evidence is I get to discuss evidence-based medicine a little bit, and I don't like doing that on the MCRIT podcast too much. That's not what the MCRIT listeners generally tune in for. They want to hear about emergency department critical care. So the Practical Evidence Podcast is where I could do some discussions about evidence-based medicine and not, you know, steal the spotlight from David Newman. But I think there is room for a short, brief, tiny, little, not very, 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 very long discussion on evidence-based medicine. So I got an email from a listener, Ariel, and she asked a very good question that I want to address today. And that question is, on one of the MRAP episodes, I mentioned the PERC rule and said that the PERC rule is a rule-out criteria, but not a screening criteria. And further, she was asking, well, what's really the difference between a decision rule and a rule-out criteria and a screening criteria and a risk stratification tool? I mean, these terms are all bandied about. What do they really mean? And so here's what you need to understand. Why is the PERC, the pulmonary embolism rule-out criteria by Jeff Klein and his group, a rule-out criteria but not a screen? Well, to understand this, you have to understand the problem with most tests in emergency medicine, which is that a lot of tests aren't very sensitive or specific. Sensitivity meaning what we use to rule out a disease, specificity being what we rule in disease with, and most tests in emergency medicine aren't all that sensitive or specific. If you get lucky, you get a test that's one or the other, very sensitive or very specific, and they're useful for either ruling in or ruling out disease. It's very, very uncommon to have a test that's both sensitive and specific. And the one that always comes to mind that I talk about is the pregnancy test, the urine pregnancy test, because that could be used in a patient you had really no pretest prediction at all that your female patient could be pregnant. And if it turns out positive, chances are they're pregnant. It could dramatically change your hunch, your gestalt about what's going on with the patient. And by the same token, a patient who, you know, has a big round belly and some kicking as you put your hand on it with a negative pregnancy test, chances are they're not pregnant. And there's very few tests that have the capability to do that. Now, the PERC, the pulmonary embolism rule-out criteria, is reasonably sensitive and not all that specific. What it is capable of doing is if you already have a low pretest probability, you've already looked at the patient and decided in your head, I don't think they have a PE to any great extent, but, and here's the key, I do think they have a slight chance of having a PE, then the PERC being negative could lower the patient's risk to a level that we consider safe. And for the purposes of most things in emergency medicine, that level is 2%. So if you already had some possibility in your mind the patient could have a PE, and then you decided, but not so much. I mean, I don't really, really think they have a PE. Then the PERC criteria is powerful enough to take them below that threshold, that rule-out threshold of around 2%, and you say the patient doesn't have a PE. And the most important thing about the PERC is that our organization in the United States, the ACIP Clinical Policy Committee, said that that's okay, meaning that even if you missed 2 out of every 100, you're doing the right thing, and that's really the backup you need to make these clinical decision rules work. So that is a rule-out criteria. But it's not as powerful a rule-out criteria as a test like a pregnancy test, where even if you really, really thought the patient was pregnant and you sent that you're in pregnancy and it was negative, then the patient's not pregnant. And you might try to convince yourself, oh no, I really think they are, and you might send that second confirmatory beta, or you might be smart and check the specific gravity of the urine of that pregnancy test just because you can't believe it. But honestly, the testing characteristics of that urine pregnancy test are such that it doesn't matter what you thought beforehand. Negative is negative, positive is positive. So what does that mean? It means the PERC could be used as a rule-out criteria as long as you have a low clinical gestalt. but it can't be used as a screening criteria. Now, what do you need to have a screening criteria? Well, a screening criteria means you're going to do the test without even thinking about your risk stratification of the patient. A screening test means even a patient you don't think has the disease, you're gonna do the test anyway. Now, there's two ways a screening criteria could work. Either it could be incredibly sensitive and specific, like the urine pregnancy test, or it could be really, really sensitive and have a really lousy specificity. So long as you have a follow-up test that's non-invasive, that's not expensive, that is very specific, even if it's not sensitive. For instance, we always talk about HIV screening. It's really nice to know if a patient has HIV, and a lot of them at the time we're testing are asymptomatic, meaning we have no pre-test suspicion the patient has HIV when we're doing these routine HIV tests. We just want to know early when we could still do a really good thing for the patient's disease state. Well, we'll send any of these, you know, mucus swab tests, any of these saliva tests, or any of the blood tests that are point of care. And these are incredibly sensitive, but they're fairly inspecific, meaning that test is positive. It doesn't necessarily mean the patient has HIV. And yes, of course, we all know they're sensitive in after that period of weeks where they're not in the acute phase. And I'm just not even talking about that. But let's say the patient's had latent HIV for a year. Yes, they're incredibly sensitive. Not specific. You need to follow it up with a specific test if it is positive to really confirm that the patient has a disease. All right, before I go any further, let me just take a couple seconds to talk about our bandwidth sponsor. As usual, our bandwidth sponsor is EB Medicine. You can find them at ebmedicine.net. The product I want to highlight this month is something I don't use because I don't want to take care of children, but from the people I know who do take care of kids, they love this resource, and that is the pediatric emergency medicine practice. It is equally as good as the emergency practice for adults, according to all my pediatric emergency friends, which means it is astoundingly good. And if you take care of kids at all, then this is the resource you want to check out. It's evidence-based reviews of the clinical conditions that matter to you when taking care of patients in the pediatric emergency department. So check them out at ebmedicine.net. As always, we thank them so much for sponsoring this show. All right, so let's get back to the show. The PERC criteria is not sensitive enough even for that. You can't take every patient you have at triage who has a little bit of shortness of breath or a little chest pain and use the PERC criteria. It's not specific enough for that. It's not anywhere near specific. And unlike the HIV test, there's not a cheap and easy test you could follow with that is very specific. You have to use invasive, dangerous, expensive tests like CT scan. Now, let's say someone created an E-dimer, and the E-dimer was insensitive for pulmonary embolism, but incredibly specific. Well, then you could use the PERC criteria. And if they were positive on the PERC, then you could send an E-dimer, not a D-dimer. See, D-dimer like PERC is very sensitive and inspecific and unspecific. But if you had an E-dimer that was very specific and not all that sensitive, then you could PERC the patient at triage as a screen for any patient with chest pain or shortness of breath, and then just send the E-dimer. And if the E-dimer was positive, then, well, if it was specific enough, you could just say the patient has a PE, but let's say it was very specific but not fully specific to take you above the rule-in threshold, generally between 80 and 90%, you could do the invasive test now because your number of patients you'd have to test would be quite small. Now, the last thing that Ariel asked is, well, what about the Wells criteria? What is that? Well, that's a risk stratification decision rule. That is not really sensitive enough to rule out PE. It only is useful to determine what test you're going to do. If the patient's low or moderate pretest probability, you could do a D-dimer. If they're high pretest probability, you need a test like a CT scan. And it really, and I'll disagree with David Newman on this, is not sensitive enough to rule out PE. So you can't use it as a screen. You can't use it as a rule out criteria. It's a risk stratification decision rule. Now, one more thing mentioned in the emails. Well, why are we using something like the PERC rule that's just incorporating what I've already done with my Gestalt? All the things in the PERC are the same things I use to determine whether the patient has a PE or not in my mind. Absolutely. That's where most of these decision rule criteria come from is the things we're already doing. The difference is they're quantified, they're weighted, and they're validated. And that's the thing. That's why decision rules are so powerful, is they take our gestalt and they put it into quantitative form and they validate it against a whole range of patients. And so hopefully this answered your questions, Ariel. If not, email me or put it in the show comments and I'll be sure to clarify further.